Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're going to turn the page and consider the alternative to a man's foolishness, a man fixated on killing, a man fixated on deceit, a man fixated on controlling others through politics and religion. And instead, we're going to look at what Yahweh had to say about the nature of his relationship with us in the Garden of Eden. And we've spent the last three programs discussing God's testimony as to what made us unique among animals, which is singular. We were given a nesama, which is probably the most unused aspect of the human character today. A nesama is our conscience, our ability to differentiate between right and wrong, our ability to be discerning, to exercise good judgment, the very thing that the politically correct movement wants to usurp from us. It has become the prime objective in academia, in the media, and in politics to remove the man's will, mankind's will, to exercise one's conscience, to actually investigate, observe, consider, and determine what is true and what is not. So we know that is the thing that made the man unique, that was given the opportunity to form a relationship with Yahweh. That is what made man, as apart from other animals, in the image of God. And then we learned that the Garden of Eden was a protective enclosure that was conducive to life, and that it was a place of great joy, that God's idea of a good time is camping out together with this particular and unique creation, humankind. And we have learned through the prophecy that the conditions that existed in the Garden of Eden will be restored, that when Yahweh returns, and it will be Yahweh, not Jesus Christ, it is Yahweh himself that is going to return, and that when he does, he is going to restore the planet that we have so devastated with our weapons, with our religious pollution, and he's going to restore it back to the conditions that that existed in the Garden of Eden. That restoration is just 20 years in our future. So with those things noted, along with one other aspect of this story that I want to share, because Yah shared it with us as we continue with his testimony, it's always nice to be able to view the whole story collectively. Yahweh told us that if you're interested in salvation and becoming perfect, vindicated, that you ought to pay special attention to the conditions that existed in the Garden of Eden. And relative to that, you ought to come to understand and appreciate the story of Abraham, who is our father, the father of the covenant, and Sarah, who gave us birth. And so that the covenant and the conditions of the Garden of Eden tell a cohesive story of God's desire to establish a relationship with us, and that that relationship leads to our salvation. All right. With that background, this is what the creator of the universe, the author of life, the designer of the Garden of Eden, the architect even of humankind, said next. And Yahweh Almighty planted and firmly established, embedded, a sheltered and protective garden conducive to life in Eden from the east. And he established him relationally, fashioning and forming the man named Adam there. Ha Adam is how we find this written in Hebrew. And it is the man. Therefore, Adam is really serving more as a title than it is a name. As Ha Adam, it would be the man. Introducing a noun, but it could also be a proper noun, and if this man is to have a name, his name would be Adam. Now, it's interesting that we managed to transliterate this man's name correctly from the Hebrew. Adam is Adam in Hebrew, and as a name, it would be Adam in any other language. It's always Adam. But we were unable to, in our English Bibles, to translate his wife's name, which is, or transliterate his wife's name, which is Chawa. that religious institutions chose to change it and replace it with the name of a pagan sun goddess, actually a Mother Earth goddess, Eve. And even though Yahweh's name was written here in this same text and was written using the same 22 letters that comprise the Hebrew alphabet, five of which are vowels, 17 of which are consonants, they couldn't manage to transliterate Yahweh's name, but they managed to transliterate Adam's name, even though it is apparent that Adam's name is really just a noun. So, going over this statement again, Yahweh established Eden on earth. Now, for him to have established this protective garden of Eden on earth, that means that it is a distinct place on earth, set apart from other places on earth, a unique environment created by God on our planet. The reason he's telling us this is that he's telling you that the entire earth was not in the condition of Eden. You know, that's one of the Christian myths that there was, that the animals, dinosaurs, I guess, you know, velociraptors, well, must have been grass eaters, herbivores, during the time of Adam, because, in the Garden of Eden, because there was no death or dying. That's not true. You know, a lot of the animals were carnivores. Lots of death and dying. Matter of fact, the oil reserves that we tap today, to a large extent, are this residue of death. Trees grow out of the that cycle of life. The leaves fall and they become nourishment for the roots as the trees grow. And animals are born and they die. And so God is saying that, you know, I created the earth, I created all these various types of animals and plants and this environment, and then in the midst of that, I established Eden. So Eden is a place set apart from the rest of the world, from a place of death and dying. That is essential in terms of our understanding of who Yahweh is and what he is offering us via his covenant. Yahweh says that his name is set apart. He says that his spirit is set apart. He says that his son is the most set apart not only from him spiritually, but also set apart from him into a material manifestation. He says that that his land is set apart. He says that his people are set apart. He says that his covenant is set apart. He says that the path to him is set apart. Yes, the very spirit of God is the Ruach Kodesh, the set-apart spirit. And so here Eden, which is the model for living with God in his home for all eternity, is set apart. It is a protective garden conducive to life of great joy that was embedded, planted on this planet. He said it was to the east, and it is to the east of his home now in this world, which is Yisrael. And it's the east of part of Turkey today, the location of the Garden of Eden. We will examine from the evidence that Yahweh provides. It would be very similar to co-located with Lake Van in eastern Turkey today. But that's an important aspect of this, that God is saying that this was a place distinct, set apart from the rest of the world, that he established it on this planet. And the purpose of it was to fashion and form the man named Adam there. Now, there's something else worth the pondering here. By using Sem in this discussion, and he established him, Sem, but also meaning placed, and he placed him there, God could be inferring that mankind was created outside of the garden. And I think that's what he is actually conveying. Whether Sim is translated and he placed him there, or he established him there inside of this garden, either way, he didn't say that he, Bara, created him there. He talked about the nature of man's creation, but the nature of man's creation was not stated in the context of Eden. Now he is talking about placing the man there. when we have absolute proof that Homo sapiens have roamed this planet because a family, I think it's about 20 large men, women, and children, have been found in caves in Israel that date back 97,000 years ago. Adam and Chawa were booted from the garden 6,000 years ago, 20 years shy of 6,000 years ago, as it would transpire. And so we know that man thrived and was conceived long before the episode that the insights were told about Eden. So it appears that God took humankind, Homo sapien, and placed Homo sapien in the garden, established him there, and gave him the Nesoma. This one man named Adam gave him the Nesoma so that he would be more like God, so that he could become like God, so that he could come to like God. There. So it does suggest what we know to be true, what God affirmed later in his testimony by talking about towns and cities and communities outside of the garden, even communities that had could communicate by reading, because he put a sign on Cain's head, that we know that humankind existed outside of the garden. And that this unique man, the one named Adam, was placed there after receiving his Nesoma. You see, this passage could have been translated, and he put there the man whom relationally he had formed. Moving to the next statement, we read, Yahweh Almighty enabled life to sprout up and grow from the ground, all kinds of trees which are desirable in appearance and good. The tree of lives was in the midst of the protective enclosure. All right, so here's God. He takes this, this one place on earth. It happens to be in, if you want a proximity here, it's at the headwaters of the Tigris and Euphrates River. And even today, they come together. Now, it's a volcanic area, so that the rise of mountains in this area could have diverted the headwaters ever so slightly. But basically, they come together very close in proximity to one another. Their headwaters, not the mouth, in eastern Turkey today near Lake Van. And he says, there I created this protective enclosure that was conducive to life of great joy. And then he said, in that garden, that he planted trees, things that were beautiful to see and beautiful to behold. We'll return to Shattering Myths in a moment. All right, welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're considering the story of Eden. We're not considering this story from a religious perspective. In fact, God hates religion. God damn religion would be a appropriate way to phrase it. Yahweh, which is God's one and only name, is into relationships. And the story of the Garden of Eden describes the nature of relationships that that God is interested in forming. It is based on the covenant. Yahweh said as much in his testimony regarding the nature of Eden in a prophetic witness in Yeshayahu, when he tells us when he comes back that he's going to reestablish the entire earth back into the conditions of the Garden of Eden, because he is interested in having a relationship with us and camping out with us. And in that regard, he tells us that if we want to understand the nature of this relationship, we should consider everything he has to say about Eden. So that's why we're doing it. And Yahweh Almighty planted and firmly embedded a sheltered and protective garden conducive to life in Eden, in the east. And he established him relationally, fashioning and forming the man named Adam there. Yahweh Almighty enabled life to sprout up and grow from the ground. And ground here is Adamah. It's written the same way as Adam, with the addition of the Hebrew he, which is pronounced ah at the end of the word. Typically, the ah makes a word feminine in Hebrew. Not always the case, but quite often you get a feminine variation of a word by adding the ah at the end of it. All kinds of trees which are desirable in appearance and good to eat. So God is saying that, you know, this filled this garden with his favorite trees. Beautiful trees to look at, wonderful to eat. I don't know if you all have done this. I have a farm in the east, and in that farm in the east, we planted about 150 fruit trees. And I will tell you, during the spring, they are the most beautiful trees on our property. I mean, the colors of the flowers, and they're just covered in blooms. But also, we planted cherries, wonderful to eat. Plums, wonderful to eat. All variety of peaches, which are just unbelievably delicious. Apples, nectarines, pears. You know, fruit is just a marvelous thing to eat. You know, so here's a tree that is beautiful and a tree that is edible. And so whatever God's favorites were, He planted them in the garden. Now, they may have been the same kind of trees that I've just described. They may have been entirely different trees. All He says is beautiful to look at, beautiful, good to eat. It reminds me of the things that I have experience with. So, He said the tree of lives, chayim. Chayim chai is the Hebrew word for life. Chayim is plural. So it's typically translated in English Bible as the tree of life. But if God meant it to be the tree of life, He would have said the S, and it's Esh, the S-H sound, the S-H or the upright timber of chai, not chayim, but it's chayim. And He says this tree of lives was in the midst, in the middle or center of the protective garden enclosure, the gar. So, first let's begin at the beginning with Shema, translated enabled life to sprout up and grow. That which doesn't grow dies. I want to tell you, it's one of the things that I came to understand. This was actually being enriched by my children, and it explains so much of Jan's nature and why he wanted this relationship, is that we are enriched by our children. I know I have been enriched by mine. I have learned from mine. I have grown because of mine. Helping my children grow has caused me to grow. God cannot be infinite unless He grows. Anything that does not grow dies. For God to be infinite, He must grow. The only way for God to grow is through relationships with His children. So, we look at Shema, which means He enabled life to sprout up and grow. One of my children told me, writing a presentation for a class back in high school, that he came up with a realization that God grows, and he ascribed that growth to the covenant. And, you know, his professor, who was, I think, a Presbyterian Buddhist by training, having gone to Harvard or Princeton's Divinity School, was all aghast. Say, how can you say that God grows? You know, God is supposed to be infinite. And my son laid it out systematically with the methodology of an engineer, saying that he can't be infinite if he doesn't grow, because that is the definition of infinity, and he grows through relationships. I always find it interesting when God's testimony is incongruent with man's assessment. God says that He is infinite in influence, that He is infinite in mercy, that He is infinite in love. He never says that He is omnipresent. He never says that He is omniscient, all-knowing. Of course, religions want to make God omnipresent so that He is interacting in the minutia of their lives. And they want Him to be all-knowing, but if He's all-knowing, then there can be no forgiveness of sin because He cannot remove it from memory. So God does not claim to be these things. And this notion that God can grow is just way beyond the capacity of most people to understand, but it is rational. Why else would God want to conceive a family if He did not want to grow through experiences with His children? And how could God be infinite in any dimension if He did not continue to grow? Because that's the nature, the very definition of infinite. So Yahweh grows to live, and that is the purpose of man. Just as our children complete us, filling our lives and making us richer with each experience, entertaining us, God gains something from his relationships with humankind. Each added member to his eternal family, each unique camping experience, each loving and grateful conversation, each meaningful question, each profound insight grasp adds to Yah's happiness and satisfaction. Our Heavenly Father is not so big that he doesn't grow a little each time one of his children calls out his name and spends some quality time with him. An infinite entity, by definition, must continually grow. If you stop growing, you become finite. The souls created independent from Yahweh, who choose to love and exist with him, make him more than he was. While it is completely inconsistent with religious concepts of God being omniscient and omnipresent, the idea of God growing through loving family relationships is the only rational explanation for creation, for the conception of life, for authoring the covenant and its Torah. Another amazing detail we discover by pondering Yahweh's word is that Shema, the term which embodies abundant life growing up and increasing in stature, it is the root of Nesama, the unique gift of judgment given to Adam, which not only made him like God, but more importantly, made Adam capable of liking God. Our Nesama is our conscience, the seat of judgment and discernment. This ability to reason enables us to know Yahweh, to choose Yahweh, to understand what Yahweh is offering, to trust him, to love him. It is the unique human quality which makes it possible for us to transcend our own mortality and live and grow with God forever. Growing up with him as his children and enjoying life and all of its abundance. Shama is the basis of Neshama. And it speaks of growing, of life expanding and becoming more abundant, increasing in stature. Now, I've shared this a lot of times in the past, that in eternity, we're going to be like first child born, Yahusha. When his soul was released from Sheol and reunified with the set-apart spirit, he became the kind of entity that we will one day be, whereby he's principally a spiritual entity at that point, so he's no longer stuck in time. He can travel vast distances in no time at all, and can appear wherever he wants, can walk through walls if he so desires, can manifest himself in a form that's unrelated to any previous form he may have taken, which is what he did, but can transition some of that spiritual energy into matter at any time. Now, I have said in the past that I think that our ability to do this will enable us to enjoy many things. Now, that's not to say that we can't enjoy many things in a spiritual form. There's much more we can enjoy in the spiritual energetic form than we can in a physical form, like traveling and expanding to see the universe, exploring inward and seeing molecular structure and how atoms are formed and the very forces that hold the universe together. And, of course, just the ability to communicate with Yahweh, who is spirit, as spirit. But there are aspects of our life now that are enjoyable that we're told will be part of our lives going forward. You know, we are going to enjoy talking with Yahweh. We're going to enjoy singing songs. We're going to enjoy music. We're going to enjoy good meals. God's name is based upon walking, us walking, engaging, and doing things with Yahweh. All of those things require a physical form. So I think that at times we will transition some of our spiritual energy, dumb it down, if you will, eyelids down to take on physical form, to be stuck in time for moments so that we can feel the enjoyment of the warmth of a campfire, of the melody of a song, of just the enjoyment of walking through a place filled with life and beauty. And so that is the expansion into the physical world with this capability, this spiritual world with the capability of being able to enjoy both, is what God is speaking about in terms of Shema, of life increasing in stature and growing in terms of abundance. This is all a result of how we exercise our Nesama in getting to know Yahweh. Therefore, we should enjoy the fact that this Shama also speaks of an ornamental covering. It's symbolic of our spiritual mother's garment of light. Now, as a masculine noun, Shema is vocalized slightly different, spelled the same way, is the branch. The branch is one of the most common metaphors for the Masayah, the implement of Yah. Why? Because the branch takes the nourishment that is produced at the root and provides life out there in its extremities. The branch from the root of Yisrael, the branch from the root of Yahweh, providing life. And so the branch is a symbol of the Masayah. As a verb, in addition to meaning causing life to grow and increasing life abundantly, Shema conveys the result of the covering and branch to complete life and therefore to achieve a successful result, to branch out, to blossom, bloom, to grow. And that is why in Yahochanan, which we have corrupted to John, Yahochanan means Yah is merciful, we find the Masayah, Yahusha, saying, I came that they may have life and might have it more abundantly. He was speaking Hebrew. He said, I came, which is bo in Hebrew, that they might have life, which is chai in Hebrew. Che, you prefer, and have it more abundantly, Shema, in Hebrew. The second insight gleaned from Bereshith, Genesis 2:9, which means in the beginning, is that God is the architect of beauty and a most brilliant designer. His creation, from sunrises to waterfalls, from spring flowers as they reach up to the heavens, to falling leaves as they carpet the earth, are visually pleasing to the eye. God made his creation beautiful to see. Now, if I can extrapolate a moment, the most pleasing thing to the eye, the most beautiful thing to behold, is his Torah, his words. They are more beautiful than any flower, more nurturing than any fruit. The ultimate thing of beauty to behold in this universe is Yahweh's Torah teaching, who it introduces us to, what it avails us of, the path that it provides. But as the architect of life, as the designer of words, Yahweh is brilliant. What he has conceived is pleasing. It is beautiful. And that's the reason why Eden is this protective enclosure of great joy. Our Creator is not only inventive, he is a maestro. The universe is beautiful. Light is amongst the most beautiful aspects of our universe. I mean, think of all of its different colors and shades, its different temperatures. What it enables us to do and see and observe. Life is beautiful in all of its colors. And that is because Yahweh is beautiful. Third, trees which produce fruit are delicious. That means that that, and they are not just delicious, they are deciduous. You know, if you look at every fruit tree on the planet is deciduous. That means that their leaves die as part of the cycle of life. The falling leaf is then transformed in its essence, rising through the roots, provide the nutrients for the spring's blossoms. And by the way, you know, when the leaves of fruit trees, deciduous trees, die, it's not an ugly sight to behold. It's beautiful. The fall colors are so spectacular. But not only are the colors spectacular, the way they carpet the ground. I don't know if you've ever had the opportunity to sit out in the woods during the fall as a soft breeze of warm air would blow through the trees as the leaves have reached their crescendo of golden and warm colors. And you see the leaves fall one at a time, here, there, everywhere. And gradually, you know, as they kind of wave, you know, through the air, turning to and fro, and kind of like little mini sails, then gently caress the ground and the other leaves that all form this magnificent carpet. Now, it's a beautiful sight. But when we think of falling leaves and deciduous trees, we know that even in the garden, there was death and decay, all as part of the cycle of life. Welcome back to Shattering Myths as we're considering the testimony that Yahweh provided in this remarkable statement. There's a fourth insight that can be gleaned. We highlighted that as we read his statement, which is that Chai, depending on how you pronounce the vowel, which is the Hebrew word for life, was written in the plural. It was written as Chayim. And so it speaks of multiples in the tree of life. Well, here in Bereshith 1:24, God says the earth will bring forth living souls, and this is Chai, living souls, nephesh, after their kind. Animals, which is Bahima, who are moving organisms and established life forms, Chaya. Then in Bereshith 2:7, Yah uses the plural of Chai, Chayim, to suggest that mankind's Nesama could be deployed to add an extension and perhaps another dimension to this mortal life. He says, and Yahweh Almighty formed for association and accompaniment the man, Adam, from the dust of the ground. He blew into his nostrils the life-giving and its lives-giving, the restoring and sustaining Chayim, conscience, Nesama, seat of judgment, the ability to recognize and discern between right and wrong, good and bad. And Adam, the man, came to exist as a living soul, Nefesh. So while considering the application of Chai life to man as well as to animals, please note that Yahweh did not use it in reference to plants. In Bereshith, Genesis 1:11, plants simply grow, they dasha. To grow in Hebrew is to dasha, sprouting forth vegetation, reproducing after their kind by way of seeds, zera. Therefore, there must be a reason that Chayim, the plural of Chai, has now been used as an adjective to modify the nature of our conscience as a proper name when it is applied to this singular tree. So the singular tree has been described, the proper noun, because it is the name for this tree, it's the tree of lives. Chayim, just as Yahweh uses Chayim to speak of the multiplicitous nature of our Nesama as it relates not only to our mortal existence, but to our eternal existence, where God uses the singular of lives, of living, Chai, when he's speaking of the souls of animals. So it's these nuances that provide powerful insights into not only the distinction between humankind and animals, but the uniqueness of these gifts that were given to man, particularly now that we know Nesama, is based on the Hebrew verb to enjoy life more abundantly. and to grow in terms of stature and therefore capability. So with all of this known, we come to the tree of lives. And to appreciate and consider the meaning of all of that, it's important to look at the root of the noun chai, which is the from the verb chaya, which is to impart life. It in turn is based upon another verb, and not just an ordinary verb, not just an average verb, not just one of many verbs in Hebrew, the verb. The most important verb in the whole of the Hebrew language, according to Yahweh, is the verb which forms the basis of his name. It is the verb which forms the basis of Chaya. It is Haya. Chaya is based on Haya, which means to exist. And that is why it is lives, because in our mortal existence, we are finite. But in our eternal existence, we are no longer finite. We are infinite. Infinite in capability and in time. And the transition from one to the other is based upon the name that is based upon the verb that forms the basis of life. Yahweh, which is based upon the verb Haya. Now, I'm not making a presumption that Yahweh's name is based upon the Hebrew verb Haya. He told us so. He says, I am who I am. I am. I was. I will be. I exist. He says, tell the children of Yisrael that Yahweh has sent you to them. Yahweh tells us that his name is based upon existence and that life is based upon his existence. Thank you for listening.